Welcome. You are about to take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Bouffet on the Love by Intuition show. For the next hour, allow her to prepare you in becoming a magnet for a profound love-infused relationship by identifying and focusing on solutions through love. Awaken the light within and let your essence shine. And now, here's Deborah Bouffet on Love by Intuition, all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Welcome, everyone. Bonjour, mes amis. And yes, here I am, Deborah Bouffet, founder and owner of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. We are a Boston-based syndicated station with all the bells and whistles. You can listen to us whether you're in Europe, or the U.S., or anywhere else, in the car, at home, on your mobile devices, and even Alexa. So we are also happy and honored to be the media partner for the Omega Institute, and they just closed up for their first season after the pandemic. They had a short season starting in July, but they will be back with more workshops to help everyone out there, you know, go within, heal all their wounds and trauma and everything else that they offer. Some excellent, phenomenal, world-renowned leaders in the workshop world there. So they'll be opening up in May of 2022, which is just around the corner. Well, I have, I'm welcoming back Stephen Manchester. You may be familiar with him because he's been on the show through the years. He is an avid writer, author, best well-known national, number one bestsellers. I believe he's written 12 books to date, and he is just phenomenal. What happened in his life is he returned home from a difficult tour of duty in Operation Desert Storm back in the late 90s, and he stepped into the world of a prison investigator of all things, but it didn't fit him, it didn't suit him, and then he started writing and just came away with his love for writing books. And I always say, and I have to repeat, that he has a gift in storytelling. And it's usually around relationships, different stories around different family type relationships, whether it's the kids, whether it's, you know, the marriage, whatever it may be. And it pulls you in as soon as you start reading, and you end up feeling as though you know these people. So his latest book is Dad, a novel. And obviously, it's all about dads, three generations. And so, Steve, without further ado, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Deborah. I really appreciate it. It's such an honor to be here again tonight.
Thank you. And I want to just share again what happened with the writing. It was a professor that that really challenged you to write at the very beginning. Is that true?
That's correct, yeah. So I ended up, you know, to your earlier point, so I served in Operation Desert Storm. I was a squad leader, a sergeant, and a military police unit in Iraq. So our job was to collect EPWs, or enemy prisoners of war. It was, a difficult tour of duty in many ways. And there were soldiers and sailors, airmen and Marines who have suffered much worse, but it was, you know, still a wartime combat type of experience. So at 23 years old, it really made me question my life and what I wanted to do with my life, you know, going forward. So I returned home, thankfully, from the Gulf War. Unfortunately, I was, you know, suffering from anxiety and depression at the time. I ended up returning to my occupation behind the prison wall as an investigator. And I also returned to school. And while I was in school, there was a gentleman by the name of Barry McKee, who was a professor who obviously had a profound and long-lasting impact in my life. But I was sitting in his class. He was teaching about the police. So I raised my hand and I said, listen, everybody understands the police, but the criminal justice system is vast. Probation's, parole, the court system, corrections. Why don't you teach anything, you know, specifically on the prison system? So he said, you know, why don't you come see me after class? And I thought, well, you know, I've just done it. I'm going to have to take this class next semester. But I went into his room. He was very gracious, and he said, listen, the only books that have been written on the prison system are done so through the perspective of an inmate, a convicted felon. In many cases, you know, they were convicted murderers, right? So he said, I'm not teaching that material in my class. And I'm going to quote him here, but he said, you know, if you're so smart, why don't you write it? And it was the last push that I needed to chase my dream down. And most people don't realize this, but, you know, the rejection rate in this industry hovers around 97%. So it's very difficult to be published. It's really, really difficult to break in. But I decided, you know, I'm going to commit. This is the life that I want to live. And it took me a real long time, you know, to even find my voice and my style. But, you know, I kept a promise to myself, and I've been writing for well over 30 years.
Yeah, it's amazing. So when, you know, when you look back at, you know, back when you were in the military, and now here you are, a national known writer, author, and all these books, do you like question yourself, how did this happen? Because it's so dramatic from one extreme to the other.
I do. I mean, I thought, to be honest with you, Deborah, right? So I knew who I was. I was always, you know, I'm kind of a big guy. I'm 6 feet. I weigh 240. So I'm not, you know, and I was well-trained in law enforcement as well as the military. But I was also born, you know, I'm a sensitive soul. And, you know, for the lack of a better term, I would consider myself an empath, right? I'm very, very in tune with other people's emotions as well as my own. And I'm not, you know, I think I was probably blessed most with being very comfortable in my own skin. So, you know, being true to myself, you know, the first couple books that I wrote were on law enforcement in the military. And once I exhausted my knowledge of that, in order for me to keep going, I had to stop making it up, right, and start writing fiction. And I am drawn to writing emotionally charged, you know, reality-based type of fiction where, you know, it's all about the dysfunction of a family and it's all about the love of a family. And I think the reason that I've been as successful as I have is I've been true to the promise that I kept to myself, but also to the voice that I put out into the world. So I write for my children. Like when I sit down and I write a book, and I've been putting out one a year for the last 12 years, I'm really writing for my kids. And everything else is by default. So if people love it or they hate it, that's, you know, I don't want to say whatever because, you know, my readers mean a great deal to me. I can't do what I do or do what I love without them. But, you know, I try to keep it pure. So when I'm writing a story, it really is for my kids and my grandkids.
And it's in essence, you're talking about leaving a legacy of all these writings, all these stories, and those of us that read each book, you know, we're getting to know all these different families out there, and which you have created, which they're created so realistically that it's really, you know, could be a neighbor, could be cousins, could be anyone. And so do you pull from families and cousins and friends? Do you pull information from them, all the relations? And I don't mean them literally, but all the information that you have absorbed over the years in your journey, you're pulling.
I definitely do. Right. I definitely do. I think, you know, you can't write about love unless you've experienced love. You can't write about loss unless you've experienced it. You know, I know a lot of, you know, very young writers who have, you know, phenomenal mechanics but don't have any life experience yet. So for me, you know, somebody will ask me, how long did it take you to write the last book? And I'll tell them, you know, 30 years, 40 years. And they'll laugh, but, you know, it may have taken me 9 months to actually pen the book, but it took me 40 years of living to get to the place where I could write that story and I could share that story. So, yeah, I'm very, very close to my family. My last name means, you know, the world to me because of the legacy, because I, you know, I want to honor and respect those who came before me, right? My grandfather, my father, his father, you know what I mean? That type of deal. So, and I feel the weight of that. I really do. And I try to impart that upon my children as well. But a lot of what I feel, you know, comes from my family. So I'll take a story that's, you know, fictionally based, but, you know, if I can't laugh, I don't expect my readers to laugh. If I can't cry, I don't expect my readers to cry. And those emotions come from people that are closest to you. So in my case, it would be, you know, family and very close friends.
Yes. Well said. So So let's talk about Dad. The book, I imagine your dad came through writing this book.
And
I like the way you honor your last name and how important it is, and that's, you know, weaved into the book as well. And I agree with that, because even my girls, they actually kept their maiden name as their middle name, and one of them uses it a lot just as their last name, even though they're married. And it's just the way they feel too, that you want to keep that name going.
Yeah, it's a lineage, right? So for me, it's like, you know, I have some cousins who are wonderful people. I have a couple of cousins that have, you know, messed up pretty good. And I don't understand it. You know what I mean? We had the same grandparents, and I think, wow, like my grandfather would be spitting in his grave, right? Like, there's something to be said for bringing respect and honor to your name, right? Like, to your family name. And I tried to teach my children that, and it's, I would almost go as far as to say it's owed, right? Like, everybody has paid the price for you to be where you are today. And you always want, you know, the next generation to do the one, you know, better than the one before it. So, for me, I'm very cognizant of that. I'm very aware of that when I write, and that, you know, my name goes on the cover, but it's also my father's name. It's my grandfather's name. It's my own, you know what I mean? It's my family's name.
Yes.
So it means a great deal to me.
Yes, it does. And I'm glad that you wrote about men, because many of the books out there are focused on women, because the mothers, they have the child and all of that. But this really focuses on how young boys are brought up, how, you know, the fathers feel about things, how they keep stuff from them, you know, tight within themselves. And it's really that generation, and I'm trusting that it changes as we go along. Like, I have two grandsons now, and they're, I feel as though they're free and open to share what they're feeling. But back in our generation, and then even our parents' generation, no matter what, how dark your experiences were, you were to keep, you know, your button up and not say, you know, throw it under the rug and never mention it. So are you familiar with that, with your ancestors?
I absolutely am, right? So, you know, I come from a line of people that were, you know, very blue collar. You know, my father, even my father's generation, right? So he was, you know, he was not the perfect man, right? But he was the perfect dad for me and my siblings, right? And when I was younger, he was heavy-handed. He was incredibly strict, and yet he was considered a breeze compared to my grandfather, right? So, you know, I look at that and I think, you know, each generation, and I want to say it softens, because, again, I went to war, and, you know, I stood up and wore the uniform, and, you know, I've been in some really pretty hairy situations right behind a prison wall. So I don't consider myself any weaker than the generations that came before me, but I do feel much freer, you know, to be vulnerable and to express, you know, the way that I feel and the way that I think. And I taught, you know, and I'm going to speak specifically, you know, my wife and I have four children, two girls, two boys. But even raising the boys, it was like, listen, you know, if you fall down on the ground and you scuff your knee, I don't want to hear you crying, right? You need to get up, right? Suck it up, that type of thing, right? But if there's something that hurts you hard, and it, you know what I mean? Like, you don't keep that in. That's poison, right? You don't bottle that in. And I gave them the courage, or at least tried to give them the courage to express their feelings. But, you know, there are some incredible stereotypes, right, in our society today where, you know, and I'll use my kids as an example, right? Again, if one of my sons falls, it's like, hey, get up, toughen up. If my daughter falls, she starts crying, I pick her up, I give her a big hug. You know, it's that whole, you know, the expectations are different, the roles are different. But what I wanted to do with Dad was I wanted to show, almost like pulling back the curtain, right? And I didn't write the book really for men. I wrote it for women to pull back that curtain and take a peek at what it's like to be a father or a son or a brother, and do that, you know, from three different points of view. From a grandfather's point of view, then his son, and then obviously the grandson that follows, right? So to do it generationally, but also look at it from, you know, roles that we play. Again, my father was very tough on my brothers and I, my sisters. You know, my first son is born, and my son thinks my father walks on water, right? Like, he's like an angel to him. And I have to laugh, but then I think about my grandfather, and my grandfather played that same role for me. You know, years later, I hear these stories about him being human and flawed, and you know, I didn't want to hear those stories, but, you know, we all play very different roles, right, in each other's life. So grandparents, you know, the way that they play a role in their grandchildren's lives versus a parent is significantly different. And then when you add the generational stuff, it becomes even more different, right? So I wanted to explain some of that away and say, just because we're not crying and just because, you know, we're not talking about it doesn't mean we're not feeling it, doesn't mean we're not thinking it, right? And we worry just as much as, you know, a dad will worry just as much as a mom will. And I wanted to really express that and kind of speak for, you know, most of the men that are out there. And Deborah, if I'm being honest, I mean, there were, you know, the dedication in the book was, you know, the book is dedicated to any man who's ever been blessed with fatherhood, but then went on to earn the title dad. And there is a significant difference between a father and a dad.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And the way you share the stories really comes home to the heart. And what I find fascinating, I always find the human, including myself, fascinating, is it really opens up a way to understand or to actually see it in action, how our minds work. You know, you can be married and happily ever, and yet you might back off emotionally because you create this story in your mind about your wife or vice versa. And you hold on to that story for years, both male and female. And, you know, just realizing if there's a question in your mind or if you're feeling that you're neglected or rejected, share it. Say, gee, I'm feeling this way. I mean, it's all about relationships and how to have better relationships. I'm feeling this way. Or what you said, you know, brought me back to this particular area, and it triggered me, and this is why. So that it cleans up and clears up in the moment or in a few days later versus holding it for 10 years and then you embellish that story and it just brings you apart. And so many people do that. I mean, it seems like that's the dance that couples do. And, you know, by the time they're 50, they've got this whole different perception of who they're married to.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew it.
So I like the... I'm sorry. No, you go.
No, I was just going to say, I knew a gentleman years ago. You know, eventually, you know, him and his wife were having, you know, difficult times for, you know, for a few years, and the marriage finally dissipated and it ended. And, you know, she had accused him of cheating, and he, you know, he looked me right in the eye and said, I swear to you, and God knows, right, I never cheated on this woman. But she believed I did. So, it's as much the truth to her. You know what I mean? That was her truth. You know what I mean? And that's just one example. It works both ways, right? But if you believe something to be true, then it's true. You know what I mean? Like, you know, so you're absolutely right. It's all about being transparent and being completely open. And I think in many cases, because of the way that we raise our children differently and because of the way we raise our sons differently from our daughters, right, it's more difficult for men to express themselves and not feel weak. Right. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to attack that without using a sledgehammer, but I wanted to attack that in the book where it's like, you know, sometimes it takes more courage to come out with, hey, this is what's going on, this is what I'm feeling, right? Versus just keeping it bottled in and just letting it eat away at you, right?
Right. Right. And it's really understanding each other, how the minds work and how they react. Right. Like if you're, you know, if you've experienced abandonment as a child, then that's going to be an issue in a relationship. Oh. And if you share that this is, you know, this is what triggers and this is how I feel, then the other person can be, the partner can be compassionate and aware and more understanding. I think it, you know, it's compassion and understanding and love, obviously, are so all about what people are. You know, there's so many things that every human being thrives on. They need attention. They need to feel safe. They need to be understood. They need to be heard. And if you, you know, if you as a partner or as a dad or a mom, if you honor that in the relationships with the kids and all, then you're going to have a healthier relationship than if you're not. I mean, there's always going to be right. disagreements, and it's the human nature. However, if you, you know, if you cultivate that and become conscious of it in every day or close to every day, then right. your relationships are going to be solid, and they're going to be, instead of looking back on life and regretting or wishing, you know, you did something differently, you know, it's a more healthy relationship, period. Yeah.
Oh, I totally agree. That's very well said.
Yeah.
Very well said.
Thank you. Well, we're coming up on our first break. This is a live show, by the way, everyone, as you know, the listeners. So feel free to give us a call. Steve would love to answer a question or two or hear about your comments. Bob is in the house to answer your call and put you through. The number is 833-220-1200. Again, 833-220-1200. 1200. We'll be back in a moment. More with Steve Manchester.
Experience a different yet profound healing with Reconnective Healing. Includes yet expands beyond any and all known forms of energy healing. The Reconnective Healing spectrum is comprised of the full healing and evolutionary continuum of energy, light, and information. It allows for healings that are not just physical, not just mental, not just emotional, yet go beyond that to bring healing that includes the evolution of your very being and essence. Deborah Beauvais, trained and certified by world-renowned Dr. Eric Pearl, offers appointment hours at Seekonk Family Chiropractic in Seekonk, Massachusetts. For questions or to set up both distance or local sessions, call Deborah at 508-431-1959. Again, 508-431-1959. Or go to lovebyintuition.com. That's lovebyintuition.com.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Beauvais on the Love by Intuition show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. Eastern. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, and to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Come join us and step into this glorious vibration called love.
After narrowly surviving the attack on Sandy Hook Elementary, first grade teacher Caitlin Royd DeBellis was left searching for answers that would never come. Eventually, she chose to focus on questions that could be answered. How do I make sure this tragedy doesn't define us? How do we get our control back? Those two questions led her to found the 501c3 nonprofit organization, Classes for Classes. When gifts poured into their classroom, she decided they would help someone else by paying it forward and being kind. This developed into a social network which allows K-8 classrooms to connect so that every student in the United States can learn these crucial lessons. Classes for Classes' mission is to build students' social-emotional intelligence by connecting them to care. All C4C projects are crowdfunded. Any teacher in the U.S. can visit classesforclasses.org. That's classes, the number 4, classes.org. Sign up today.
Looking for a fun and relaxing getaway? Omega Rest and Rejuvenation Retreats are a great way to unwind and renew your spirit. Sit and read in the garden, explore the woodland trails, or try a daily yoga or meditation class. You can stretch your body, quiet your mind, and do as much or as little as you choose. Located in Rhinebeck, New York, just 90 miles north of New York City, Omega's natural environment and quiet pace allow for extraordinary experiences to unfold. Learn more at eomega.org.
Delight your kids with an enchanting journey by reading the Paper Doll Kids children's book by Deborah Beauvais and Janine Sullivan. There's even a catchy tune, Kids for Love Song, produced by Bob Sherwood and sung by kids just like yours. The story weaves around 7 paper dolls flying around the world doing good deeds as they bring important attention to our endangered animal friends. There's even a magical ring with a universal message. Kids become interested in service projects, action through compassion, and planting seeds that nurture positive change. change. The Paper Doll Kids and Kids for Love song are a production of the Kids for Love Project. Get the book now on Amazon Kindle and the song on CD Baby or iTunes.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we are back. Again, the number, if you'd like to call in, 833-220-1200. We are with author Stephen Manchester, who has written 12 books. He is award-winning books, should I say. And if you'd like to get in touch with him, you can go right on his site. It's Stephen with a V, S-T-E-V-E-N, StephenManchester.com. We're talking about his latest book, novel, Dad, and it's a, you know, it's a triumph story about three generations of men and how they come together and interact. And one of the other things that I love about your book, Steve, is that you, when you start the book, you are pulled in, as mentioned earlier, but you are stuck with the book. In other words, you cannot put it down. You want to find out how they made out. And so you just continue reading until it's done. I can't say enough about reading, too. And I'd like to mention that with Dream Vision 7, we give away three books a month. And Steve's dad is actually November, Dream Vision 7, November book of the month. So if you sign up for our free newsletter, you'd be in the drawing, but also buy it. It's everywhere that you buy books. And the other piece of it is, with the holidays coming, what better way to give a gift that keeps on giving is through a book? I don't know if you feel this way, Steve, but you know, you can read a book and 3 months later read it again and get so much more out of it in a different perspective or different understanding, and it just keeps giving.
I agree with you. I love giving books away as gifts, and not just the stuff that I write, but you know, the stuff that I read and things that have an impact in my world. I'll you know, buy extra copies and give them away as gifts. So yeah.
I think it's good to start early with the kids, to take them. Right. That's one of the things my late husband used to do. He loved to read as well. And so he would take the kids when they were just five and take them to the library and get books so they would get the bug and sense. And it just takes you away. It takes you to a different place. There's nothing like a book. And I like to hold a book.
Yeah, no, I do too. I mean, I understand why people read on, iPads and tablets. I mean, you can, get 1,000 books on something that, weighs a pound, but there's nothing like having that experience, right? The smell of the paper. And to me, it's, I'm always going to be old school when it comes to that. I love a print version.
Yes. Yes. I'm with you on that. So the last time we had you on the show, we were 5 months into the pandemic, and now here we are, more than a year later from the time we, I think it was August that you came on, and so now here we are, another year and a few months. How has it affected you in the sense of with your books? Obviously, people go on tours or do speaking engagements or book signings. How did that affect you?
Well, it's definitely saved me some gas money. I'm a very social person, so I love meeting people. And, when I write a book, it's really the first half of a conversation or a discussion. And getting feedback or talking to my readers is that second half, right? It's that give and take type of thing. So over the pandemic, I tried to make it time well spent as much as I could. I wrote a lot. I ended up writing a sequel to, my 80s book, which will be out next year. And that obviously we finished that and got that out into the world. Most of my engagements were via Zoom. If I wasn't doing, radio shows like we're doing tonight, then I was on Zoom, working with book clubs. And I got to tell you, I felt very fortunate to have that opportunity to do that and stay, connected to my readers or people that were just discovering my work. Because it's, if I'm just going to sit in my office and write these books and nobody reads them and we don't talk about them, then, I'm going to get to the tail end of my life and look back and think, what the heck did I do, right? Like, it's really about connecting with other people. And I believe we're all connected, we always will be. So this is my way of sharing. And then, again, when I sit down and I have a conversation with a reader and they share back, I mean, that's where the magic happens for sure.
Yeah, I agree. So how has the pandemic changed your world and the family in the sense of dealing with all the craziness and all the, the fear that's been placed out there on the news and
right.
all the different, decisions we've had to make, whether it
right.
be getting together as Thanksgiving or whether you're taking the vaccine and all those variables. So how has it changed your life in the sense of the way you conduct your life or how you feel about life?
Yeah, I think, my wife and I have been very open and honest with our kids. And, we have four children together. One is a senior in high school. The other three, are out of college. They're off living on their own and working away in the world. But we stay very, very connected, and we've been very honest about it, right? So I'm of the thought that, I'll do whatever it is that I can for the betterment, right? So I am a pro, vaccine person. I know I have friends who don't believe in the vaccine, and, I want to respect that as well. But, for me, it's about, let's get past this. I mean, at a time when the country faced polio, there were people that suffered it was debilitating, right? And then, the vaccine finally took hold and, we got past that. And I see this almost in the same light where it's just a different generation that needs to face this. And I'm actually saddened by how political it's become. And regardless of what side, you land on politically, it's kind of sad
right.
that, we look at medicine or science and then, politicize that, and this, I think there's so much misinformation out there in the world. One of the dangers for me is it's easier for me to get lost in, the imagination of an 8-year-old, right? Which is where I need to be when I write. Because if you turn on the TV, you watch the news, and it can be very depressing, right? Like there's so
right.
much negativity in social media and in the different broadcasts. So I need to stay engaged. I need to stay plugged in and not escape from that. So I've really been conscious of not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
On the upside, we also use it as a time to, to slow the world down for our family. There were more family dinners. There was more time to sit at the kitchen table and talk. And we had gotten away from that. Everybody is so busy all the time doing their own thing and, out in the world trying to succeed. And it's like, sometimes it's like when you have this massive snowstorm, right, up in New England, and everything stops. I mean, I see that as a great blessing, right, as long as nobody gets hurt. But, get back to what's really important. Get back to what's, back to basics.
Yeah.
So we try to do that as well.
Yeah, I think it's opened up a lot of debating within the families, and
right.
and it's reminding or it's an opportunity for each of us to remind ourselves that everyone has a different belief. Everyone, not only do they look differently, so back in the day, if they, and even now with old white men, they have a certain perspective of what the human being should look like. But now we're at a place where there's two sides, even in your immediate family. So it's embracing the different beliefs, not that anyone is right or wrong, but that they have an opinion. And there's so many opinions out there now. It has brought a lot of, I think, soul growth to many people at many levels.
I think you're right. You're right. And, you brought up words like, compassion. I mean, if you're ever gonna have any compassion in your life, right? It's now, right? Because there are different perspectives, there's different ways to look at things. You brought up the word listening. Like, I can be set in my ways, and that's a kind way to put it, right? About the way that I see the world and some of the people in the world, and then I see my children having a different view, and then it's me
mm-hmm.
stopping myself saying, let's take a look at it. At least try to take a look at it the way that they take a look at it. And the one thing I will say, which I think is a blessing, is you know, for my kids, you know, if you get into, you know, sexual orientation, gender, you know, skin color, it becomes much, you know, much, much less an issue, you know, than it was for my grandfather or even my father's generation. Like, we've gotten better with that stuff, right? It's not, you know, you're not right or wrong, right? You're just different, right? You're just different. Right. And I think my children see it that way. And I think it's such a blessing, and I think they have us hands down, right, when it comes to that. I never considered myself a bigot by any stretch, but I was raised by somebody that bordered on that, you know what I mean? And, you know, I evolved from his views, and then my children evolved even further from mine, so I think it's a good thing.
Yes, absolutely. And I agree, I had the same kind of bringing up where, you know, it was very narrow, and it was right. what they called Swamp Yankee. I think you even mentioned that in one of the books.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then you, as you get older, you start to question if that really is who you are. And now the generations, they don't see color, they don't see gender, they don't see anything. They see the creativity, the expressing of each person as something fun. And so we've come a ways, we have come quite some time. So we've come a long way. However, there's still so much work to be done. And I think the pandemic has opened up all the different avenues to look at and see what we can do to help the connectiveness grow even further. Because even in the back in the day, Republicans and Democrats disagreed, but they always came to a place of community or decisions so that they had to do, you know, so they could move forward with the country. And it's not like that any longer. So you wonder what's going to happen. But in the long run, I'm a believer that it's going to get better and better. And we're going to be one human race, and we're all going to be helping each other.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I hope more than anything that that's true. And I believe it to be true as well. I think we're living through some tough times right now. I really do. I think, you know, there's a lot of toxicity, right? And I think part of it is, you know, the overload of information, right? So when you look at the internet, I mean, what an incredible blessing, right? And then I watch my children or their generation and how social media has impacted their world, you know what I mean? And not always in a positive light. So I think, my God, I mean, we need to get a handle around that stuff and harness it and then put the human being first, right? Always.
Yes, that's it. That just that sentence is perfect, Steve. Put the human being first.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, the rest is just secondary. I mean, it really, really is. I know it's so difficult. I mean, to avoid conversations now about politics, and I can be really, you know, convicted on some of the things that I believe. I mean, I served, you know, in the military. Like, I consider myself a patriot, but I'm not the only person, right, who, you know what I mean, it can claim patriotism, right? And I don't think whether you're on one side or the other, and I think that's what we've gotten away from, right? And you look at, you know, the folks from the World War II era where they pulled together, right, and did just absolutely some amazing things, you know, and you think, wow, I mean, you would hope that something as large and as evil as COVID would do the same thing, and you know, we'll get to see that. So I'm hoping it happens.
Yeah. Well, there's always two sides to the coin. So, I mean, as much as it can be a dark situation and a lot of people have passed on because of it, there's always a silver lining, a gift, even in the darkest times. I mean, when you think about even the Holocaust, I mean, what came out of that is so many amazing people that, you know, saved, you know, took a chance to save a number of people, writers, Frankl, after all his writing that he did, that really healed the people. So, I mean, the majority of the human race, you know, I really believe that they're going in the right direction, and others will, if they went within and allowed themselves to feel the love, the divinity that we all are, it would help them make choices and understand things so much better than, you know, being stuck in a belief that may not make sense at all. I don't know.
Right.
You know, I even think about what goes on with Sandy Hook and all that, you know, and there, and these people are free to destroy lives that have lost their little ones. I mean, it can get crazy, but I think it all goes back to childhood. If you don't have the structure and the love and the safe feeling at home, you're going to have problems when you're adults. And we can see that, in many ways. Yeah. So, all right. Well, we have to take a break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about Jonah, who is in the book. So, yes. Everyone stay with us. Back in a moment.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Bovee on the Love by Intuition show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. Eastern. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, and to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Come join us and step into this glorious vibration called love.
Delight your kids with an enchanting journey by reading the Paper Doll Kids children's book by Deborah Bovee and Janine Sullivan. There's even a catchy tune, Kids for Love Song, produced by Bob Sherwood and sung by kids just like yours. The story weaves around seven paper dolls flying around the world doing good deeds as they bring important attention to our endangered animal friends. There's even a magical ring with a universal message. Kids become interested in service projects, action through compassion, and planting seeds that nurture positive change. The Paper Doll Kids and Kids for Love Song are a production of the Kids for Love Project. Get the book now on Amazon Kindle and the song on CD Baby or iTunes.
Are miracles real? Can you move from mayhem to miracles? 30 prominent authors say yes as they share their high fives and down lows of challenges, abuse, addiction, and love. Experience hope, the magic elixir of miracles, through the personal stories of New York Times bestselling authors James Redfield, Dr. Bernie Siegel, Sister Jenna, Reverend Temple Hayes, and many more. If you like bestsellers, Chaos to Clarity, and Crappy to Happy, you'll love Crying and Laughing Through Mayhem to Miracles. Sacred Stories of Transformational Hope, available now on Amazon and in bookstores worldwide.
It's a child's job to play, to learn, and to have fun. It's an adult's job to keep them safe. Did you know that 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually abused before the age of 18? Every day, families enter the Children's Advocacy Center because a child's courage to tell someone what happened to them. Keeping our children safe starts with a conversation. This is Michelle Aranger, Executive Director of the Children's Advocacy Center. Learn more on how to keep your child safe. Visit cacofbc.org. This message made possible by the Fall River Rotary Club.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And welcome back. So in the book we have Jonah, who is the son, and he's actually going to school. But he has his own space down in the basement, freedom and all. And one of the things I'd like to bring up to talk about is teaching, which the father, you know, wanted to have his, which we all do. And you spoke to that earlier. We all want our kids to have a better life than what we did. But he learned that teaching kids responsibility and things of that sort are really important if they're going to grow up to be an adult. And if not, it really makes a huge difference how they conduct themselves or how they cope with different things that happen once they start having their own children and responsibilities. I'm sure you took that from your own experience or someone close to you.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, again, I can't even imagine the way that my father was raised. I mean, I can't imagine. It was probably much more difficult than the way that I was raised, right? So then I come up, 70s, 80s, and become a young adult, right, in the 90s. And then I started having children, and, you know, I want to give them more than what I had. And then the question wasn't, you know, as a father or as a parent, I should say, and it's not an easy question to ask yourself, but, you know, did I do too much, right? So, you know, there are people I know, the greatest thing that their parents gave them was wings, right? Instead of, you know, there's the world, get out and go get it, right? And these people become the most resourceful and, you know, people with integrity, and you know what I mean? So I don't think, you know, character to me, some of the greatest people I've ever met, you know, I realized that character was forged in hardship, right? And I did everything I could as my children grew up to avoid that for them. Right. So I took care of business for them. And as they got to, you know, that young adult age, you know, this pang of panic sets in where it's like, well, did I do too much? Mm-hmm. Right. And are they prepared to face the world? Because really, you know, my job is not to write. My job is not, you know, to make money. I mean, that supports my real job, which was to, you know, to be a dad and to raise these children. And if I'm on my job and I'm doing my job correctly, then, you know, it was for me to prepare them for the world, right? So that, and that's really that whole storyline where Oliver, who's the dad, starts to panic and think, you know, I gave my kid everything, but, you know what I mean? Did I give him or her the right things? Mm-hmm. And is it too late, right? Because maybe they're not, you know, maybe they're ill-prepared for the world, and it's that panic that sets in. But I think it's also timely because it's somewhat generational where, you know, we overcompensated as parents for a lot of the things that we didn't get as kids, right? And then you wonder if it continues to go on like that, you know, after a certain point, and I say this tongue-in-cheek with a grin, right? But, you know, eventually mm-hmm. we start raising veal, right? Like it's, you know, like at some point, I mean, you know, people have to have expectations and they have to, you know, live up to those expectations. So it was right. A difficult process to work through that in the book.
Yes, and you find out through life as you go along and think about, you know, how you parented and even thinking about how your children are parenting, that I'm a true believer of instilling responsibility, helping others, and the kids, the value of a dollar, remember that one? And
yeah, right.
Right. You know, there were certain things that I, you know, instilled into the kids and Rick when he was here too, and I just kept going. But the piece of it is we've all seen through friends and family and beyond what happens with kids if you don't instill that. If they're not taught that they need to, you know, clean their closet or make their bed, or maybe they're doing dishes or someone else vacuums. And when you, if you don't have those responsibilities and learn to help, then how are you going to teach your children if you've never been taught yourself? And I think right. That becomes an issue with a lot of adult kids that don't know what to do, or they don't understand it because they did not have to do it when they were young. So they right. don't see the beauty, or they don't even know what to say to their own little children.
That's true.
At least that's from my perspective. And you don't have to be hard. Like the generations before, people, you know, got a beating or the right. abuse. It doesn't have to be abuse, but you can instill responsibility. Like we all, and I know, Steve, you know this so well, how good of a feeling when we do something because it was needed to be done. You know, right. whether it's allowing, you know, the car in front of you to go ahead and just takes a minute, you have a little spark inside because you know that you helped that person.
Right.
Or when your kids, if the teacher asks you to go get those books and stack them up, that's teaching responsibility, helping out, and it fills you up with love.
Right.
So if you haven't had that, It's a big piece, I think, missing in unfortunately in some of the kids, and naturally
yeah,
the parents.
Yeah,
you know, it's a cycle.
Yeah, and it comes from that foundation that's poured in the home, right? So for me, you know, I learned very early on that, you know, children really don't listen, right? They watch. So,
yes.
You know, how I conduct myself and how my wife conducts herself, that's the template, right? So if we have a loving relationship and the kids see that, then, you know, that's something that they can aspire to, right? When you know, they find a mate. Or, you know, how do I tell my kids to go help somebody if they don't see me helping people? Right? So
yeah.
It's how you live, right? And I, you know, I think that both my wife and I were very aware of that. We're very conscious of that. And we spent a lot of time, you know, on those lessons, you know what I mean? I think in the book, what I wanted to do, and some of it was embellished, clearly, but, you know, when the grandfather and his son, you know, his son, so, you know, the grandfather's name is Robert, his son's name is Oliver, their relationship is significantly different from Oliver's relationship with his son, Jonah. And that was only intended to be generational, you know what I mean? To say, mm-hmm. I'm not sure we're heading in the right direction as far as some of these lessons go. But in the same respect, I did not want to be preachy. The last thing I ever want to do in my books is to talk down to people or try to act as if I have the answers, because I don't, right? It's me just telling a story, and then hopefully most people relate to that story, right? Or it's familiar to them,
mm-hmm.
And it's they can share with others and then have those conversations, right? So, but to me, you know, the role of being a parent is, I mean, it's going to be probably the most difficult job I've ever had in my life. And it's also the greatest job I'm ever going to have in my life. And I know that.
Yes. You know, when I think about everyone, you know, the more people that read this book, I envision a number of young men, older men reading it and coming away with, oh, why don't
right.
I open up and share what bothers me, or something that was very painful, an experience like the grandfather had the experience with Vietnam, to be able
right.
to just say what fear they may have, and that's how it colored their relationship or how it colored the way they reacted to different things that were along the way. So, I mean, the story is everyone's story. However, by bringing up the details of it like you have with the three men, it really can, you know, the person that's reading it can question their own fatherhood,
right.
And what could I do better right now? I don't have to wait 10 years or 20 years. What could I change right now? So I want to thank you for writing these kinds of books, because you'd have to be numb not to
right.
take away the gift of what's presented and how and whether you choose or not to make a change in your own life.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate that. That means a lot to me. I mean, you know, I the last thing I want to do is waste my time or anybody else's, right? So, you know, I walk that fine line constantly, Deborah, between, you know, writing about stuff that's impactful and has, you know, at least potentially has, you know, has the power to make change, right? It doesn't have to be massive change,
right.
But, you know, at the very little, you know, at the very least, I should say, the undercurrent is that none of us is ever alone, not ever. I believe that, you know, people struggle with things. I do as well. So if you read my books, then you know that, you know, you at least, at the very least, you got one other guy in the boat with you, right, who's rowing. So
yes.
Don't feel alone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And your website, again, is stephenmanchester.com. We only have a couple
Correct.
Minutes. What would you like to leave the listeners with, Steve?
Well, just that, you know, I'm very approachable. So if, you know, if you haven't read any of my stuff, I'd appreciate it if you gave it a try. I basically write, you know, male perspective to a female audience. I'm actually known for writing tearjerkers, but not all my stuff is meant to elicit that type of emotion. But for me, it's about connecting, right? It's really
mm-hmm.
about connecting. So I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, Twitter. I'm not in love with social media, but I understand, you know, that a lot of positive can come from that. So feel free to reach out. You know, all of my stuff is available on Amazon as well. And Amazon, you know, if you can buy, you know, your books from a mom and pop shop, then, you know, please do, right? It's, you know, the world's changing, you know, significantly, right? And not all of it's for the better, but for me, it's about, you know, connecting to readers and finding new readers, right, to share my work with. So I'm really, really happy to be here, Deborah, and I can't thank you enough for the opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm honored to have you, always. And you brought up something that I think is so important to repeat, is buying local, buying from the small companies to support them so they can continue to thrive in these large corporation type big box companies that are out there. And it's important to keep those small companies going. Yeah.
Well, it sure is.
Yes. So with that said, I thank you, and I'm sure we will see you again. And you mentioned earlier that you just a book that's coming out that's from the 80s, a book on the last one. What was the name of that book that you...
The last one was Bread Bags and Bullies. And the new book, and it's the first sequel I've written in 30 years, because I just kind of, some stories deserve a little more real estate, and this one did. So the new book is called Lawn Darts and Lemonade, and it'll be out next year. But, right now it's really all about that and getting out and, getting that book out into the world and talking to people.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you again for writing, Dad. I think it's a powerful reminder of how important the dad is, and it's an eye-opener for those that read that may be feeling that they need to open up more, or they need to say what they feel, or they need to act differently. And you made a big point where kids watch, and what they see, they emanate.
That's who they become, for sure.
Exactly. So, all right. Yeah. Well, thank you again, Steve. Onwards
thank
and upwards
you,
we go.
And
everyone, read the book, buy the book, Dad by Stephen Manchester, and go on his site, stephenmanchester.com, and see all his books. And they're entertaining and educational as well, so buy them. And until we meet again, everyone, au revoir.
Are you seeking a clearer path to love? Then tune in to the Love by Intuition show next week, all designed to your highest good. To contact Deborah Bouffet, owner of Empowered Connections, call her at 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or link on to lovebyintuition.com. Remember, we are all one, and we are all part of the miracle of love.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.